Salem, John Nelson, and Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Brian Bull, Eric Galatas, and Dr. Anthony Lysowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. We'll be hearing about an upcoming exhibit at the Multnomah Art Center on the Portland Zine Symposium.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm John Nelson. I'm speaking with the Multnomah Arts Center's Michael Walsh and Megan Hatch about their upcoming show with Portland Zine Symposium. So we got a chance to talk with the symposium's B.B. Anderson as well. The Portland Zine Symposium has been putting on events in Portland now for as long as I've been here, over a decade, and I've come to look forward to meeting new authors and artists at their yearly event. The symposium this year will take place November 8 and 9 at Portland State University Smith Ballroom at PSU, where attendees can count on seeing new material and some fresh perspectives on zine making, whether it's art zines, comics, politics, her zines, literary zines, fanzines. We love these self-published forms of communication, spiritually connected perhaps with mail art and movements like Fluxus, perhaps, not to mention that old diary you kept as a child, right? The letters you saved from school. Zines are personal expressions made for sharing and can be practically anything. Everyone has their own interpretation and a personal perspective on how zines represent them. This fall in the Multnomah Arts Center's front gallery, to learn more about zines and how the Portland Zine Symposium has been supporting their creation here in the Pacific Northwest, you can check out Zines from the Archives of the Portland Zine Symposium from September 19 through October 25th. Let's get to it then, my conversation with Michael Walsh and Megan Hatch from the Multnomah Arts Center for KBOO Community Radio, and B.B. Anderson from the Portland Zine Symposium. I'll let everyone just introduce themselves here before we get started. Thanks for joining us here at KBOO.
My name is Megan Hatch, pronouns are she, her. I run the gallery, actually the two galleries, the exhibition program here at the Multnomah Arts Center, and I have been here for the past 3 years.
Gallery specialist, is that your job title?
Gallery specialist, yes. Yes. So my role here is to facilitate the programming of our exhibition spaces. We have two of them, the front and center galleries. The center gallery is a 700 square foot, beautiful white wall, gorgeously lit space that was renovated many years ago now with support from the community. And our front gallery is the newer space that we have begun to utilize in the past couple of years to expand opportunities, exhibition opportunities to regional artists in our lobby area. And it is a wonderful space for smaller shows. And my role is to work with the artists to get their art on the walls. Curation and installation and marketing, and to work with the community to choose the artists whose work go on the walls and in the display cases.
Michael Walsh, you're the director of the Multnomah Art Center. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do there?
Yeah, John, I'm glad to. As director of the Multnomah Art Center, I really oversee at a kind of bird's eye level the facility management, the instructors and staff. that make it all work and come together and try to help and provide the support they need to be successful. I am also involved in directing programming and trying to identify how we can best serve the community, keeping accessibility and equity to accessing our programs as positive and easy as possible for the whole community. Another big part of what I do, we have a nonprofit organization, the Multnomah Arts Center Association of Friends Group, that I help to go above and beyond what we're able to do in the Parks Bureau alone.
My name is Bibi Anderson. My pronouns are they and them. I am an artist and a zine maker. I've been tabling at zine conventions since 2007, and I'm an organizer for the Portland Zine Symposium since 2017. So 18 years and 8 years respectively. We are having a show coming up at Smith Ballroom November 8th and 9th. We're having over 200 table arts on Saturday and Sunday. It's free and open to the public. And right now we're having a show that we're getting ready for in the front gallery at the Multnomah Arts Center on September 25th. And we're very excited to do that. We're also going to be having a reading on Thursday, October 9th at the Multnomah Arts Center.
The Multnomah Arts Center will be showcasing a group show at the front gallery this month from the Portland Zine Symposium. For folks who don't know, what is a zine?
So I am one of those Kinko's era zine makers, but Bibi's really the expert here and is so eloquent about this art form that I would really love to cede the floor to them to frame this for us, to talk about what a zine is or even just what a zine can be, because I know there's a lot of range there.
And I think the term was perzine. I'm very familiar with zines, but I do not think I've heard the term perzine, if you could share about that too.
All right, Bibi.
Oh, okay. First of all, I would like to hear what Michael and Megan, their experience with zines. You can't get away that easily. But I can also, because I know that they both have, you know, long histories in sort of these zines too. But perzines, as I have understood them, is like personal zines. They're usually autobiographical. I think they kind of have to be autobiographical, but they can be art, they can be writing, they can be sort of art that documents your experience. And I noticed it, I'm sure, I mean, the history of zines goes back so long ago of like what constitutes a zine. But I've noticed that there was a really big scene for perzines in the late 80s and 90s and aughts, and that ties into third wave feminism and Riot Girl and punk and all of these scenes, you know, in like Portland and Olympia and Seattle and DC. And the thing that was so great is that it was a way to have this correspondence between people in the community from different sides of the country. And so there were ways for you to find out about zines in the area, and then, you know, maybe you would table at events and get in touch with these people. And I know people who built very lasting relationships through this sort of network of zine creators.
Right.
It's fascinating. I never knew zines went back as far as I've recently learned since the Portland Zine Symposium was successful in being curated into the gallery at Multnomah Arts Center. But I always saw a connection, you know, actually in the Kinko's, between zines and zine creators and poetry chapbooks, which were essentially usually an individual creating a collection, self-publishing usually a collection of their own poetry or a really small press. So that was where my experience was in doing poetry chapbooks and then meeting people who were doing zines. And, you know, big example of maybe a perzine, Dishwasher Pete, who did the Dishwasher zine had infamy. And when we were talking the other day, Bibi, you remind me that they actually had an appearance on David Letterman in some amazing, you know, collusion of different worlds. But yeah, to me, zines embodied usually a multimedia or multi, you know, artist collaboration, where what I always saw in zines was contributions from many different individuals coming together under kind of the editorship of somebody who just wanted to put out something cool to them. And it could be on any variety of subjects. Yeah, the Kinko's on the southwest exit ramp of the Morrison Bridge was a breeding ground for creativity, and it was a place to meet other creators. It was very hopping, especially like, you know, in the later hours. Definitely
that beginning to me of knowing what these things were. It was a really fabulous dynamic experience.
My entry into all of this was black and white photocopies, early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, and coming at it from the visual art perspective. So predominantly the folks that I was making zines with were queer, feminist women, not all women, queers in general, who were artists, some also writers. So we had a little bit of that cross-pollination there. And it was very personal. It was about sharing stories. It was about educating each other and a broader audience, hopefully. It was definitely coming from a place of hoping for change in the world around us and in the world to come. So there was definitely an activist sense to it all as well.
I came across a great quote the other day, and I couldn't help but apply it to zine culture. This is by Carl Jung, just apropos of nothing. And he said, loneliness does not come from having no people about one, but from being unable to communicate the things that seem important to oneself. And I thought, wow, that's zine culture right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. That definitely resonates for me.
Yeah.
BB, you said you've been with Portland Zine Symposium for about 8 years. It goes back, though, as far as, I think, 2001. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the symposium?
We're in our 25th year. We've been hosting events and our tabling events for people who are interested in independent publishing and DIY art making. And so our goal is to do this annual event to create a space for people to express themselves creatively, to express their ideas in a safe place where they feel supported by their community. And we've had different organizers and different venues that we've done work at, in addition to other events that we have around Portland. And that's the history as I know it.
What are some trends that you've noticed just in your 8 years here in Portland in zines?
Something that I've noticed recently, well, I think there's always been zine makers, but it is having a resurgence recently in the education space. And I think that is carrying over from people who made zines in the 90s and the aughts, now becoming teachers. And so there is like a whole generation of people who are getting into publishing because of self-publishing, because it is kind of the easiest, the most direct route to it right now. And I think with it, with the people who are bringing their own experiences and new perspectives and a lot of very inspiring storytelling and narrative, that feels like it's all happening in Portland right now. So I feel like we're actually in a very special time for all of these new zine makers who are sort of using the tools that they've learned from the older generation of zine artists and making their own thing. I think there's also more resources, like maybe because it used to be just the Kinko's that you would go to make mm-hmm. zines, or if you were fortunate enough to have a photocopier or have access to a photocopier at work. But now there's dedicated spaces. I mean, the Independent Publishing Resource Center is a huge one. There's a number of printers around town, too, who specialize in self-publishing. And there's a lot more encouragement as just like a public form of creative expression. So that's really, I think, just like a lovely thing to notice happening over the decades that I've been an organizer and before I was an organizer.
We've been talking with the Portland Zine Symposium's B.B. Anderson, along with Multnomah Art Center's Michael Walsh and Megan Hatch, about upcoming exhibition Zines from the Archives of the Portland Zine Symposium in Southwest Portland. The show opens September 19th, and we'll talk some more with Megan Hatch in just a moment about how these shows at the Multnomah Art Center come together. It's a community effort there, just as KBOO is here, a labor of love and collaboration, and something which must be supported if it's to stick around. Right now, we're in the middle of our fundraiser, the KBOO Out Loud fundraiser, and that's what we're saying. Support the station so it won't go away. You know, like the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, it's gone, and with it a sizable portion of our annual budget. Gone. Without listener support, there is none. Certainly not enough to keep going. That's been seen to. We need you. Visit us online at kboo.fm/give and give, and as much as you feel comfortable with, as much as you can. Become a monthly sustaining member if you're serious. If you can't do without KBOO in Portland, Imagine that. Ugh. Support the radio stations you can't do without. That's what I say. Support KBOO. Keep it around. Keep it healthy. Visit KBOO.fm and click that red donate button in the upper right-hand corner. Or if you're texting, simply text the letters KBOO. That's KBOO, the name of the station. Text it to the number 44321. I watched someone do this the other day, and it worked. It takes a minute, but it's required. Do it now. Support the station you can't do without. Everything you need to know is at kboo.fm/give. Let's get back to our segment on the show coming up in Multnomah Village on the occasion of the Portland Zine Symposium's 25th year. For KBOO Community Radio, here's Multnomah Art Center's gallery specialist, Megan Hatch.
So the exhibition calendar for both of our galleries, the front and the center galleries, is shaped at least a year ahead of time via an annual call for art. We form a selection committee, new every year, with myself and two artist curators from the community. So it's really the community that is shaping the programming that happens in these spaces. And Phoebe's proposal for the Portland Zine Symposium really touched a chord for everybody on the selection committee for a variety of reasons. And they were offered a show, and I have since then had the pleasure of working with BB on shaping the show and pulling it together. And I am sitting here in my office. Right across from me is a gorgeous pile of zines that are just waiting to go into the exhibition. And the exhibition will be going up next week, along with the biennial MAC Instructors Show, which goes up in our center gallery, showcasing the work of over 30 of our really brilliant, wonderful arts instructors here.
You know, one question I had was, what kind of installation problems are there for a show like this? How do you present zines in an art exhibit context?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's one that Bibi and I have talked about a fair amount. So one of the beauties of the front gallery, the space where the show will be, is that a large part of that exhibition space is built in cases. And so we have, you know, over 70 zines in this show, and some of them will be placed open so people can read a couple of pages. Some of them will be faced out so people can see the cover. Some of them will be standing up. Some of them will be laying down. They'll be at varying levels. So really, it's about shaping an experience for the viewer where they get a sense of the breadth of what a zine can be and some of the depth that is in any one given zine. That, I would think, would be the goal of how we shape and curate an exhibition like this.
You're kind of directing the audience's gaze in a way, like check out this page or this cover, right?
Yeah, obviously we would love for people to be able to read all of these zines, but these are also zines from the archives, many of them. And so to honor the content of the zines, we'll have some of them open so people can read them and understand, you know, what some of the content is speaking to. And folks will get an opportunity to more directly engage with zines and with the creators at the reading event that Bibi mentioned earlier. On Thursday, October 9th in the evening, there will be an event with several local creators of zines.
Now, I understand there's lots of classes available at the Multnomah Arts Center. Maybe this is a good question for Michael Walsh. If people are inspired by this exhibition that you're putting on, are there classes or coursework at the Multnomah Arts Center along the lines of zine making?
Well, zine making is, I would say, kind of the intersection of a number of different potential art forms, and we do teach quite a few different art forms, and sky's the limit when your creativity is developing a zine. But we have literary art classes in our program, as well as printmaking and bookbinding classes. Those are the things that would most directly come to mind within what we would offer. So we have several literary arts instructors, as well as a dedicated printmaking program that has the opportunity to do different types of visual arts creation, as well as some introduction to letterpress printing using a letterpress from 1893 that was beautifully restored some decades back. So that's another example of what one might be able to do there, from bookbinding and printmaking to creative writing. Those are all major intersectors that are going to lead to one doing their own zine. And I do believe specific instruction in zine, we've done with teens in the past, we've done camps, things like that. But again, Independent Press Resource Center, I think we've said IPRC a number of times, but the Independent Press Resource Center is another fabulous nonprofit organization that is definitely worth noting for those interests as well.
And there are a number of instructors over at MAC who make zines themselves. So yeah, there's plenty of ways that you can combine these disciplines and use these classes as a foundation for making zines. And I think that's where, honestly, a lot of the great stuff comes from.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if our listeners are interested in finding out more about this exhibit, the Multnomah Art Center, or the Portland Zine Symposium, what's the best way for them to do that?
For the exhibits at the Multnomah Art Center, all of our exhibit calendar, as well as a link to classes and all the wonderful things that are happening here at the center, is best accessed through our website, which is multnomaartscenter.org. On the gallery pages, there is a link to the Portland Zine Symposium that's coming up. And Bibi, do you want to speak about how folks can follow up and find out more information about PZS?
Absolutely. You can go to our website, portlandzinesymposium.org. You can also follow us on Instagram at PDX_zines. That's where we do a lot of our updates, is on Instagram. We're also on Blue Sky, I think, PDX. Zines without the underscore. Yeah, Blue Sky PDX Zines without the underscore. Yeah, you can go there for updates, but the website is a good way to get info too.
You bet. There's going to be a joint reception for both exhibitions, the one in the front gallery and the center gallery, on Thursday, September 25th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Multnomah Art Center. And everybody is welcome.
Very good. Well, thanks so much for talking to me. I'm looking forward to seeing some of you down at the opening at the Multnomah Art Center.
I have another, sorry.
There's
also reading too on October 9th, Thursday, October 9th from 7 to 8:30. You can check out readings. It is free and open to the public. Jam Dyer, Quinn Amaker, Yoko Oke, Manny Murphy, and our very own Amisa Chu, who was a longtime organizer for the Portland Zine Symposium, and we love the work that she does. So there should be some new stuff coming out. People will be selling their zines, and we're also, I think, making a plan to put all of the zines out for people to read, so that is a good opportunity to kind of check them out and put your paws on all those zines, because there's some good stuff to go through.
Well, I'm excited. I'll look forward to it.
We all are, for sure.
Yeah. Thank you, John.
Really appreciate it.
Big thanks to Multnomah Arts Center's Michael Walsh and Megan Hatch, and B.B. Anderson from the Zine Symposium. Over 70 works by zine makers who've worked with the Portland Zine Symposium over the years, featured September 19 through October 25 in Southwest Portland. And you can check that out later this week, the 19th of September through the 25th of October at the Multnomah Arts Center. More information online at multnomahartscenter.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm John Nelson.
How sharks could lose their fearsome bite. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
In June, the Trump administration announced that the government's 15-year-old website, climate.gov, a primary source of information about climate change and science, would no longer be updated.
As of 2021, the website was receiving 900,000 visits per month. The jobs of those who authored stories, created photos, and designed other materials were eliminated.
However, as The Guardian reports, a group of climate communications experts is rebuilding the old site's content through a new nonprofit at climate.us. The organization will also offer services about climate to others, such as local governments which are trying to adapt to global warming.
According to Rebecca Lindsay, who was the managing editor of the government's old site, the new entity will include several of her previous colleagues, a lot of whom are grieving over losing not only a job, but also a vocation.
Lindsay said there's a need for content that helps people develop climate literacy, and that being outside of government means the new group can have fun using platforms like TikTok.
The nonprofit has launched a crowdfunding effort and hopes to get more permanent operating support from a foundation.
Some people who reside in the southern portion of San Diego County say it stinks to live there, literally.
For years, residents have complained that odors emanating from the polluted Tijuana River, which flows from Mexico into the U.S. toward the Pacific Ocean, are causing eye, nose, and throat irritation, respiratory problems, fatigue, and headaches.
Now, a new study led by scientists at Scripps Institution of Oceanography says they're not imagining things. The research found that the contaminated river is contaminating the air, releasing large quantities of the toxic gas hydrogen sulfide, commonly known as sewer gas, because it smells like rotten eggs.
In September 2024, the team had set up air quality monitors in San Diego's South Bay. One location was where water tumbles from a culvert, and as it falls, it creates enough turbulence to send aerosolized particles of pollutants from the river into the air.
The scientists measured peak concentrations of hydrogen sulfide that were some 4,500 times what is typical for an urban area, as well as identifying hundreds of other gases, showing for the first time a direct link between poor water quality and bad air quality, a connection lead investigator Kimberly Prather says had not been made before.
Depending on whom you ask, prairie dogs are either cute mammals of the plains or unwelcome neighbors. They can host fleas and carry plague and can be infected with tularemia, both of which can be passed to humans and other animals.
However, prairie dogs are a keystone species that provide food and habitat for more than 120 animals, and they're an important food source for hawks, eagles, and ferrets.
Now, a new study shows that prairie dogs can play a role in limiting the spread and intensity of wildfires.
Courtney Duchard of the University of Arizona found that where prairie dog colonies were present on the Great Plains, wildfires behaved differently because the animals dig burrows, eat vegetation, and keep plants short.
Duchard said that in those colonies, you can see a shift from grasses to small flowering plants. The dogs keep ground areas bare, acting like a firebreak.
The scientists say that although there are conflicts when it comes to prairie dog management, the animals may be providing ecosystem services yet to be quantified.
And finally, sharks are one of the world's most formidable hunters, able to grab and shred prey with their sharp teeth. But according to a new study, the predators could be less fearsome in the future because of climate change.
German researchers say that as more CO2 is released into the atmosphere and oceans become acidic, it's taking the bite out of shark teeth by making them brittle and weak.
Ocean water has stayed fairly basic for thousands of years, hanging out at around 8.1 pH on average. But the pH is predicted to drop by the year 2300 to be almost 10 times more acidic than it is today.
Acidification weakens corals and makes it harder for creatures like mussels, clams, and oysters to create their protective shells. So the team wanted to understand what it could mean for sharks.
They studied freshly fallen teeth of black-tip reef sharks living in an aquarium. The black tips are good candidates to study because they swim with their mouths open to breathe, constantly exposing their teeth to water.
The researchers put the teeth in two tanks of water for 8 weeks, one with the current ocean pH and the other at the projected pH caused by global warming. They found that the teeth in more acidic water had surface damage, such as cracks and holes, and increased root corrosion.
Although sharks can continuously replace their teeth, the authors say new ones may also be susceptible to deterioration.
Sharks with fragile teeth could find it more difficult to feed and defend themselves, which would reduce populations and destabilize marine ecosystems. A toothless grin would add to the stressors the creatures already face such as overfishing and plastic pollution.
That's it for this week in water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will take place on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. The meeting will include a state of the station presented by KBOO's Board of Directors and an opportunity for members to meet the candidates running in the board election. KBOO will introduce its 2026 to 2027 operating plan and will present its first Diane Carl Mentorship Award. New directors will be announced at the